Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Eric, we've got Kenny Omega still AEW champion after Jungle Boy was decisively defeated after a competitive 18 minutes. Your assessment of this main event that I think people have been looking forward to for a while. I don't think the outcome is shocking.
No, I think this is what you wanted to do. It's Jungle Boy's, I think it's his first world title match. And so, as Don Callis said afterward, great step on Jungle Boy's journey. JR said he's just 24. You don't want, you know, he's got plenty of time for him to, there's plenty of time for him to be the AEW world champion at some point. I think they might be lining up Hangman Page, who's a little bit older, for the to possibly unseat Kenny Omega, or at least challenge him. And so a really good match. I liked it a lot. They kept teasing that, hey, if this goes longer than the end of the hour, we won't cut away to whatever lame movie semi-pro that we're scheduled to show after this. We'll keep going. And so I thought, well, they said it three times. They must be paying this off. This must be going to like 9:05, 9:10. And then they started doing so much and packing so many moves into the match, maybe without selling as long as you traditionally would. And so I knew they probably were not going over their TV limit and that it was maybe a swerve, whatever it was. But liked that sequence where he gets him in the snare trap again, Jungle Boy, Kenny, and after countering the one wing angel, he got the – Jungle Boy did get the sort of hope spot at the end when he kicked out of one potential finisher, but then he immediately was put in the Tiger Driver 98, immediately put into the one-winged angel, and that was it. So you'll see that in Japan. Sometimes the kid, the up-and-comer, will get to kick out of a move before then the finisher is immediately applied. So what did you think, Wade?
Yeah, I like the match a lot. I mean, this is what it should have been, 18 competitive minutes. Jungle Boy looked like he belonged in there. I think AEW's got to be super pleased that the crowd was totally behind Jungle Boy. Kenny's not getting any, like, you know, New Japan worship cheers or six-star worship cheers. You know, Kenny's a heel. The crowd is reacting as designed, as the play is designed to elicit a reaction out of the audience. And Jungle Boy, as a like really kind of low-key, serious, but likable up-and-comer, played his part great. And I thought Kenny looked like a more serious champion during ring introductions while still playing up his bit as the you know, out-of-control ego superstar with the four title belts on his way to the ring. I'm glad the announcers acknowledged what the other three belts were, at least two of them, mid or late in the match. Ross brought it up because sometimes they don't talk about it. And I think they're sometimes forget there's people out there who only watch Dynamite and don't take time to watch a lot of other shows and don't always know what's going on with some other things going on. But anyway, I thought it met my expectations, and my expectations were it'd be a really good match, and it was a really good match. I think it was great. It didn't exceed my expectations, but like I said, I had lofty expectations for it, and I don't think they could be disappointed with any aspect of it in terms of how it played out, how JB came across. But the right finish is for your dominant heel world champion to be Jungle Boy here, but you want to create as much doubt as you can, and I think they did that. You know, and I liked, you know, Marco still being sort of the hothead who got kicked out of ringside, but then Anderson and Gallows are a little too gleeful about it, and the ref kicks them out too. Kind of clear ringside and let the two have a straightforward match. But that's not a match where you needed to protect JB with a distraction right before he lost or anything like that. You know, you're building to Omega against bigger stars, and I like that. I was expecting, perhaps naively, because we haven't had the Christian-Matt Hardy match yet, a Christian turn. I guess I had my pre-Matt Hardy feud thoughts in my head, but boy, was that Christian promo full of passive-aggressive comments. I loved it. I think the seeds are planted. It's not yet, but I'm pretty sure we're going to get it. But I could be wrong. Maybe it's some red herrings or I'm reading too much into it. But that Christian promo seemed like it was ready for a reason for Christian to come out and, quote, accidentally or on purpose cost Jungle Boy the match because JB won the Casino Battle Royal instead of him.
I am really glad they did not do the distraction effery, to clean up my language, finish. That is just rampant in U.S. wrestling these days. And I don't think you're reading too much into the Christian Cage thing. He's been doing the passive-aggressive shticks for a few months now, right? And I think he's headed toward a heel turn because he's not getting his due. He's a legend. He should be getting title shots. He's not getting it. It's more of a slow burn. Potentially he turns on Jungle Boy at some point, and maybe if there is a Hangman Page wins the belt in September, which I don't think is any sure bet at this point. But if he does, you know, you get build up Christian Cage to be to have a Page to challenge Hangman for the title, right? Build him up along the way. I thought the end, they kind of it was a little bit, as AEW often is, a bit overbooked. So we get this match, Kenny wins clean, One Wing Angel, and then Christian Cage comes to make the save against Omega, and then Matt Hardy attacks him, and then there's the Bucks. Why are the Bucks out there? I didn't know. It was just a bit overstuffed at the end there, but that's just going to be the nature of AEW because they make most of their money through their TV rights package, and they always want you to have a hook to come in next week, right? They want that last shot to have you thinking, gotta tune in next week. And I guess it's something we're just going to have to learn to live with because I don't think it's going away 18 months into their TV contract or more.
I will say overall, I really like the format of the show. It's sort of comfort food for me to see a wrestling show with a lot of short backstage promos, some with an interviewer holding the mic, some without. I think over the last couple decades, more than that now, we've moved into this zone of, oh, it's passé to have somebody stand in front of a backdrop or whatever and hold a microphone and ask someone questions. I still think that's the best way to efficiently build up your undercard, your mid-card, and even give main eventers a chance to get a few words out, building up who they are, what they're about, what their personality is, and then build up a specific match. And I thought this, I clearly don't have the stats in front of me. I don't know if there's a chart with this, but this seemed like the most sound bites and interviews AEW has done that were not in the ring or part of like an elaborate video package or some backstage skit, like just straightforward. You know, there was Miro and there was Jungle Boy and Christian and there were the Young Bucks and on. It was just, and I like that a lot. I think it helps build up the matches on the show, helps build up upcoming matches, and it doesn't take a lot of time. And I don't know if they'll continue that when they have like full houses at arenas everywhere, but I think they can because they're short. And then that means the majority of what you're doing in the ring is actually wrestling. And I sort of like the idea, and I'd love to WWE to do this, just stop doing any talking segments in the ring, make that sort of a sacred place for wrestling and shake up the format. Not because it's by definition the right thing, but because it would be such a refreshing change to just break away from that long-winded in-ring promo that has sort of become a staple the last 25 years, but didn't exist until the late 90s.
Yeah, I don't think I'd like to see AEW start the show. They always start the show with a hot match, right? That's their formula.
I prefer
hot match over 20 to 25 minute live in-ring promo. AEW pre-taped, I think, all of their interviews tonight. Eddie Kingston and Pillman also had separate segments there, so that's at least five. And that's a good, and they did show some of the Road 2 footage to set up the main event before, you know, so that would be a sixth, I guess. And it's good to pre-tape because you can get it right and you know how long it is when you're formatting a show. If it goes long, then you don't have to cut 2 minutes out of the main event and screw the fans that way. So the only quibble I have is, they're always, because they're about to go on the road again and they have to sell tickets to all of these shows, They are always be selling. So they are – they're setting up all these matches, which is great. They're not just throwing matches out there cold. But, man, I know there's some matches on this Wednesday, June 30th. I know there's matches for Road Rage, and now there's even a women's title match already announced, I think, by Vicky for Fight for the Fallen, which is July 14th or 21st. I think it's a two-parter. So it's just hard without – literally, I had to write it all down to keep it straight. It's hard to do without a scorecard. And so I get they got to tell people about this. They got to sell tickets so they have a hot live crowd while they're also promoting future week shows. But I got to think for the average reader, it can get confusing at times.
Or the average viewer.
Average reader, average viewer. Them too.
Yes. Newspaper man coming through accidentally there, the average reader. Yes, I think one of the things that AEW could clean up, and this has been the case all along, I don't have an easy answer, is doing a better job communicating clearly what's coming up and having in emphasizing what needs to be emphasized and understanding we probably don't need everything that's coming up in the next week or two or three told to us, because a lot of things they talk about don't need to be stressed. That said, I like at the beginning of a show, laying out what's coming up. I think it makes everything feel a little more important if you bother to talk about it ahead of time. Even Matt Sydal against Dante Martin, I'm glad that got hyped ahead of time, at least on social media and mentioned. But it can be overwhelming. Sometimes it seems overwhelming to the announcers how much they hype. I don't think they have to go to the kind of, and I heard this a long time ago, Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn with their 2.5 things approach, which is they want at the end of every show, they think viewers can remember 2.5 things. Like, there's two things for sure, and then we sort of hope for a third, but we're not going to push it too hard because it could take away from the other two things. And kind of stop there, because that's all people are going to take from your show. It's about 2.5 things with them after they enjoy themselves for 2 or 3 hours. There's something to be said for that mentality. I think you can break from it, and I'm sure WWE does at times too. But, yeah, there was a lot coming at us. And all these theme shows, I think having one theme show after another takes away from the theme show seeming special. So, you know, there's Road Rager and whatever the Fight for the Fallen and what's the other one? Fighter Fest. Yeah, just there's a little too much of that, and I think it actually can take away from your pay-per-view branding. So it's a little mucky and cluttered when it comes to advertising future shows. But, you know, it's not a big problem. But I agree with you. It can be a little much.
Correct. Yes. I don't think they're ever going to change. They haven't changed so far. They have heeded some of your constant criticisms, a fair way to describe what you do week in and week out. I think, to your point, they have picked up on the more pre-tape promos and introducing matches. They are probably always going to overstuff until they feel like they've gotten good TV ratings, that they're stable. I mean, maybe that's just the nature of the product. You got to take the good with the bad, and the good is the show is never boring because it's so jam-packed and moves from segment to segment, and there's something happening in all 8 quarters, right? So, sometimes multiple things happening in each quarter of the 8. But, you know, on the downside, you don't remember the 2.5 things, probably. There are 5 things, 6 things you're trying to get you to remember, and you may only remember 1 or 2 of them, and that's just how AEW is going to be.
All right, well, let's pause and introduce ourselves and set the table for what we got coming up here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, a special Saturday night edition of the program. Thanks, AEW. Thanks, TNT. Thanks, NBA. It's June 26, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, the editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and PWTorch.com, and host of a variety of podcasts throughout the week, many of them VIP exclusive, but the Wade Keller Post Shows and Podcasts are not. They are free for everyone. Of course, VIP members get them with the ads and plugs removed. So go VIP for that reason and many more. And I am joined by former Pro Wrestling Torch columnist circa 1990. Oh, my God. Eric Kroll. Eric, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Hey, thanks for having me on this wacky, zany Saturday night edition of AEW Dynamite Post Show.
Yes, yes. Great to have you. I've been part of some roundtable discussions, previewing pay-per-views and other post shows, and it's always great to have your experienced voice on the program, Eric.
Well, thank you. That's quite the sell, Jeff.
Yes, very good. So we invite your calls and emails. We'd love to hear from some people we don't normally hear from because it's Saturday night. You don't have to go to bed to get up to work tomorrow. So give us a call if you haven't before and you're listening to us live. The number to call and participate is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, if you want to be on the show, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard and indicates you want to be brought on the show to ask a question or comment on the show. If you just want to listen in, that's an efficient way to do so, too. You can just call and listen and decide if you want to join the conversation as the show goes along. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. One programming note, earlier today on our Blue Logo show, we put up our usual Saturday interview classic, and this week it was my interview from 5 years ago with Justin Credible. Talked about some wide variety of topics, including CM Punk in UFC. And then after that, we ran Pat McNeil's interview with Ethan Page, All-Ego Ethan Page, talking about his career aspirations and interesting story about what he was told at a WWF tryout, or WWE, showing my age there, a WWE tryout, and how it changed kind of the course of his career a little bit. And so it's interesting to hear a guy who's now a national star and was featured on Tonight's Show back when he was a standout indie wrestler, getting some attention and turning some heads. So check that out. That's on the Blue Logo Show today. If you're not subscribing to both of our free shows, the Wade Keller Post Show and the Wade Keller Podcasts, please do so by searching Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe to both the Red Logo Show and the Blue Logo Show. They're both free. The Red Logo Show are the post shows, live call-in shows after TV events, and the Blue Logo Show are regular podcasts, interviews, and Q&As and pay-per-view previews. Also, while you're at it, subscribe to our other hosts who host the PW Torch Daily Cast. It's a different show, different theme every day with different hosts. PW Torch is what you want to search to subscribe to that, and that includes tomorrow night's Wrestling Night in America, a live call-in show with Greg Parks, PW Torch's editor, Zach Adorn, joining him as co-host to talk more about tonight's Dynamite and what's coming up in WWE and kind of the, I don't know if post-pandemic's the word, Eric, but, you know, post-empty arena as crowds return and things amp up, the return of Edge on Friday night on SmackDown, a lot of things for them to talk about. So join them live or just download the show afterwards. All right. Let's get to it. Let's get to phone calls and emails. I had the wrong link in my Dynamite report, along with the wrong date. Thank you, Eric. So some people might not have found the show. Hopefully they're starting to find us, but I had the link to the last show I hosted. Was it Friday? Yeah, I don't know what I did. Anyway, but the right link is there now, so hopefully you've all found us. We will move to our first caller, and that is area code 802. 802, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Good evening, Wade. Eric, this is Nick from Brattleboro, Vermont. How are you on this fine Saturday?
Doing well. Good to hear from you, Nick. What do you think of Dynamite tonight?
I really enjoyed the whole show. I mean, it was biggest thing was I loved watching wrestling with a live, and I mean live in terms of hyped up audience. It so brought me into the show, so to speak, you know, just that energy that kind of came out of the television set and dragged me into it.
You know what? It's a good topic, Eric. How did that affect your viewing of the show? I mean, Dynamite sort of eased into it so slowly. It's been less sudden. I think it'll be more dramatic when WWE does it, frankly, ROH and Impact also. But how did the crowd, did it seem, like it seems to me, I'm going around without a mask, I'm vaccinated, and it sort of feels like the pandemic's behind me, even though I know we still got some concerns, and you know, there's people who aren't vaccinated yet and all that. But seeing live crowds, I mean, we're seeing it at sporting events more often, and life seems more back to normal. Is it still kind of like remarkable to you when you tune in and you see that many fans bunched up in the stands? And is it a big change, or does it just sort of feel like you quickly got used to it again, like when you come home from a vacation and pretty soon it's just like back in the routine?
Yeah, it certainly is a little bit weird. It's pandemic for what, 15 months, 16 months, and then bam, all of a sudden we're, you know, the pedal to the metal. And I was at an indie show with, I don't know, maybe 250 people in a microbrewery last Saturday night, Freelance Underground in the Chicago area. And it felt like I was at home, right? It felt normal. I don't want to say it seemed like the last 15 months didn't happen, because obviously they happened, and obviously a whole bunch more people died than needed to die. And but it has seemed to be pretty easy to put it in the rearview mirror for many people, and we saw that when AEW drew, what, 4,000, 5,000 people to the pay-per-view show the last weekend in May over Memorial Day weekend. And it just seems like we're back. It'll seem even more so to your point when Raw and SmackDown start and they're out of that Thunderdome, and we're going to get, what, 40, 50,000 people maybe in Las Vegas for SummerSlam and the return of John Cena maybe. So it's great. You know, how did it play out in the AEW show tonight? The return of the sort of return of the live crowd and the noise, the heat. We Jungle Boy completely justified in their decision to push Jungle Boy. He's super over with that theme song. Money well spent on Tony Khan's part. And then in the opening match, which was sort of the only other real match they gave away tonight, Hangman Page versus Powerhouse Hobbs. Page came out, got a big pop, and seemed very happy. He had a big beaming smile on his face. He didn't have beer in his hand before the match. I don't recall if he did afterward.
But we got a cowboy shit chant again. It's been a
while. Yeah, and so the question for AEW probably, since they seem to be catapulting this guy toward a world title match against Kenny Omega at All Out in early September, is when crowds come back, is Paige still over? Is he going to recapture that momentum that he had before the pandemic, doing the sort of Stone Cold Steve Austin gimmick with the beer, a little bit of it at least, for the modern audience? And I think the answer so far seems to be yes. And they can go that way, but we'll find out for sure in the month of July when they return to the road.
Yeah. It's fun having the audience respond, and I'm, you know, more curious about how fans respond to some WWE acts than I am AEW, because I think AEW is a little bit more predictable in terms of, you know, fans aligning with how people are being framed on television for the most part. But there's wrestlers who are going to be buoyed by the crowd enthusiasm and the energy, and it does make the product better. I mean, I know from communicating with wrestlers and talking with wrestlers how much they miss that live, real feedback. The Thunderdome helped a lot, by the way. I mean, there were WWE wrestlers who told me how it made such a difference for them having synthetic sound piped in. Like, it simulated what they're used to, and they got the hang of it after a few weeks, and it helped give them that kind of feedback that they're used to. But, of course, they know, just like when you drink diet soda, you know you're drinking something sort of artificial that isn't really natural and native to your tongue, but it's, you know, sort of satisfying compared to water sometimes, I guess. I wouldn't know much about that. It's going to be nice to have, like, the full sugar rush of actual fans responding to things organically. It's like, it's just weird when wrestlers respond to synthetic chants at the Thunderdome, like Bianca Belair, who was all flattered by the fake cheers and fake chant of EST that they piped in, and it just makes them look kind of silly. So for all those reasons and more, it's going to be great to have fans back. And I thought it was nice that, you know, they were talking about Daily's Place and Wednesday being the send-off and fan appreciation night. Daily's Place has been a great home. But kind of like with NXT, when they're in one arena, you're eager to see other fans show that sort of that excitement of this being a novelty for them as opposed to sort of a weekly thing that they do. So it's going to be fun. Anyway, we've been talking for a while about that. Nick, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, I love seeing it. I know probably for another 8 months I ain't going to go. I'm old, I have diabetes, and I'm just being really careful anyway. I'm not even going back to my job dealing poker in a casino. So, I mean, but, you know, it's as I
that
said,
that feels
it's,
like
it's
that would
great.
Be pretty high risk. Nick, that feels like
yeah,
that'd be
no,
pretty high
I
risk
just,
cause being around different strangers every moment of your work day over and over.
Oh, yeah. I quit March 15th of 2020, and I decided not to go back, and now I'm in local town politics. So it's what a wild ride we've all been on.
Wow.
Yeah, working for the select board. It's great. Small town Vermont. The one thing I wanted to bring up, and I don't know, it went by quick, and I don't know if you caught it, and it also ties into Conan kind of, he was almost walking the line that that Cody did a few weeks ago, in the political stance. But I don't know whether it was JR or Tony Schiavone, but he was saying, oh, yeah, every time I've spoken with Hobbs, he's very intelligent and articulate, and I just cringed. I know if it was JR, he's an older guy, and, obviously. But, I mean, that was such a big thing in sports for so long until, the 2000s, that they stopped. I mean, it was such a coded word this is a black athlete, but he's articulate, and I had to cringe.
If it was JR, JR was throwing himself a pity party tonight, and I was trying to piece together why, and I'm not sure I figured it out, but I know, so if that was JR saying that, then that would be strike one. And I'm pretty sure it wasn't Excalibur. Could be Schiavone.
It wasn't Excalibur. I know that.
Yeah. So it's either JR or it's Tony. And there was another point during the Statlander Bunny match where I think JR called the Blade the Butcher, or kept referring to him as the Butcher. So he had to eat that. And then during the main event, when they showed, I think one of the first time they showed Jungle Boy's mom and sister at ringside, JR identified the younger woman with the curly hair, shorter curly hair on the right, as the sister, and the older woman who had Jungle Boy's hair, right? We see he gets his hair from his mother and his facial looks from his father, but he identified her as the mother, and then JR quickly said, oh, I probably screwed that one up too. And I was like, God, why are you distracting from this match? Just stop it, JR. Stop. It's annoying. And then even later in the match, Excalibur was talking about something he'd said earlier and corrected himself. I think it was something Jungle Boy had said about an earlier match. And I'm like, is Tony Khan just really in their headsets tonight, correcting them every step of the way and making them issue clarifications in real time? It was certainly weird. To your point, you I don't think you could say the articulate line for at least 30 years. So, yeah,
it just made me cringe.
I can do this, but Eric, just explain why that's wrong, because it sounds like a compliment. It's like saying announcers saying the black wrestler is the most naturally gifted athlete in the promotion. Why is saying articulate wrong for the uninitiated?
I mean, it implies you wouldn't say that about a white athlete, right? And the fact that you would say it about a black athlete works off the assumption that perhaps some black athletes are not articulate, right? It's a default setting thing. I mean, it's a racist trope, I guess, is what you would call it in 2021. In 1990, you would just sort of cringe. But, this kind of stuff, Howard Cosell said something really bad in the early 80s, maybe, and he got booted.
Monkey comment.
Yeah.
He said he's like a tough little monkey or something like that.
And it was horribly racist, and that was it for Howard Cosell. I mean, Jimmy the Greek was on CBS, like the odds guy on the pregame show with Brett Musburger, I want to say in the 80s, said something equally stupid and racist, and he was quickly gone too. I mean, and that's the 80s we're talking about here, when Wade and I were in our prime, we were teenagers actually, but...
I was in my 20s.
Yeah, you can't do that. This should not be a newsflash in the year 2021.
Yeah, I mean, really, there should be. You can. you could write 8 things down and say, Jim, just study this week. And these are things wrestling announcers have said for years. Announcers have said for years, people of your generation didn't think that anything was wrong with them. If you want an explanation why, we'll be glad to have a talk with you. But just please don't say these 8 things. Like, you know, that's about it. Like, don't call women athletes over the age of 18 girls. You know, women can call women whatever they want, you know, casually, but a professional announcer, if you wouldn't refer to a grown man as a boy, don't refer to a grown woman as a girl in a professional context, just like you'd get kicked out of your newspaper if you started doing that, try to pass it off to an editor in a newspaper article. And, you know, you just run down kind of 8 things that, you know, people of his generation might think, oh, come on, what's a big deal? You know, and then it's like taken care of, and it just shouldn't be. And calling black people articulate is one of them, by the way. For sure, and I get why you're cringing, Nick.
So sorry, I didn't mean to take us way down that rabbit hole, but it was
it just
stuck out to me. I mean, my last point, and I'll let you get on to the other callers who are probably legion, is Chris Statlander. You know, she's come off her injury. I think, you know, she's definitely worked on her physical appearance. Her wrestling's a little bit better. I think they need to put her in the ring with better performers.
Yeah.
In other words, there was a few moves that she did that looked fine, and then there were some others where she's trying to pick up Bunny, and Bunny isn't giving the assist. It's like Sasha Banks made Belair in their match by being able to lay perfectly still and rigid while she's carrying her up the stairs. And, you know, it's so important for that other performer to help the person. And Statlander is kind of like in that in-between section where if she was working with better performers, she would seem so much better.
One of the
and
arts
I
of
hate
her act,
but I like her.
One of the arts of matchmaking is understanding which wrestlers on your roster need to be working against somebody better than them to not be exposed. And if there's value in Chris Statlander, if there's value in Bunny, I think you're right. I mean, you're better off having them against wrestlers who are better. Now, Statlander, when she showed up, came with a claim, and she was supposed to be one of the better upgrades on the women's roster, but it's been spotty. Bunny, you know, a month ago, had one of the worst TV matches I've seen in decades. It not often wrestling matches make me angry. Her match made me angry. This was a better showing from her, for sure, tonight. But there are, at times when Bunny wrestles, it looks like she's somebody making fun of wrestling, like she's mocking it. It's so bad. And her timing wasn't great here, and it didn't help Statlander look good, but this was an improvement. But, yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, that you make, Nick. I think you want to have the wrestlers who you think are really important. You want to put them against people who can make them look bad, as good as they can be, as make them look as good as they can or better than they are. And Bunny is going to pull anyone down other than, well, anyone down probably, but against anyone but a really top-flight world-class worker.
Serena Deeb.
It's going to look clunky. Yeah, it's going to look clunky, you know, to a detrimental degree. But, I mean, I thought tonight's match was passable. I mean, a couple moments you're like, you know, but this was better, and I want to give credit where it's due for sure. I think they, you know, put in a decent effort. But, yeah, Eric, your thoughts on that?
I mean, the last 2 weeks, the women's in-ring has been nothing special. Last week we had Julia Hart, the cheerleader for the Brian Pillman and Griff Garrison tag team. And this week we had Statlander and the Bunny. I'm still scarred from attending Revolution 2020 live in Chicago downtown. And it was Statlander and Nyla Rose, and I think one of them was ill, you know, had some flu or food poisoning or something maybe the day before the match, and they had it anyway, and I just, that one was oof. It was bowling shoe ugly. And then we got, you know, the other women's segment the last 2 weeks were just two promos setting up and then hyping the awful, awful mixed tag that we're going to be subjected to on Wednesday with Britt and her second versus Nyla and Vicky Guerrero. You know, the amount of screeching that's – I'm going to have to watch it on mute, I think. It's they have not covered themselves in glory coming out of the gate since Britt Baker won the women's title, and everybody was popped huge for it at the Memorial Day pay-per-view. They just seem to be stuck since then in this month in the women's arena. So maybe they've got a lot of big shows coming up, and so maybe they will book some better women's matches.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where Britt's going. You know, it's like tonight she seemed a little bit more heelish than she has, so maybe they've decided to stick with the heel. But it's definitely weird, and the match against Nyla Rose is heel. I don't know. You're right. It definitely seems like they're kind of what are we doing here? What where are we going with Britt? And they were on such a high with her, and I think they've cooled her off a bunch.
I don't think you can say, well, we want Britt to be keep her edge but still be cheered when her criticism of Vicky is age-related. Like, you don't get to be a babyface and say, well, I'm the new face of the brand and we don't have room for old faces like Vicky. It's like there's no way to frame that as, like, admirable enough for you to want to cheer for that person. And I thought we got mixed signals. I thought they both came – both Vicky and Nyla came across as heelish. You can't have Vicky doing her screeching routine like that for Andrade and then have her do a more neutral promo with Nyla and think Vicky's not the heel. I don't know what they're intending to do with Britt Baker right now, but I'd like them to pick a direction and go with it. I think there's a way to have an edge and not be a jerk. And I don't think they're succeeding right now at creating any kind of clear, natural crowd response other than people are going to cheer Britt just because it's Britt. But they're creating some headwind for that, I think. Eric, what do you think about the presentation of and hype for that match in particular?
Oh, Wade, Cody Rhodes himself said before AEW started or right after it started, face heel is so outdated. And then he proceeded to be the biggest baby face on God's green earth for virtually his entire run.
Yeah. And it's the dumbest thing. It's almost the dumbest thing that you can say about wrestling. I mean, wrestling is all about giving people, slotting somebody in a position and then featuring them in a way where you want to root for them to succeed. And that's being offset by somebody who's trying to stop them from succeeding, who you're rooting against. I mean, that when you try to take that away from wrestling, that's
right.
Ridiculous.
It's fundamental to the stage play.
You're not being progressive and reinventing things in some cool way by saying heels and faces are passe. You're denying a fundamental core aspect of wrestling with occasional exceptions at work, but that has to be an exception, not the rule.
I mean, you could do a heel versus heel match. I think when Britt comes out for that, both the tag match and the title match against Nyla, whenever in July that is, I think she's going to get cheered. I mean, I assume that the cheering for her winning the title, she's just gotten over that way, which is why probably you needed to match her coming out of the gate if you wanted to keep her a strict heel. You needed to not go heel-heel because she's going to get the cheers. You needed to book Britt against a strong babyface challenger. They just don't have anybody ready. I think they're trying to get Statlander ready for that maybe, for the next women's title shot after presumably Britt.
But you need a better personality. You need a better personality than Chris Statlander. It's not just about in-ring wrestling. They need to have baby faces who fans identify with and have a bond with and are invested in rooting for if you want fans to boo Britt Baker. No matter what Baker says in a promo, fans are going to cheer her because she's a star and she's portrayed herself charismatically and she's been entertaining during the pandemic and she's built up goodwill. So they should just go with that. Just let her be a babyface. She can still be Britt Baker, but they don't have babyface opponents for her who are ready. And so putting her against Nyla Rose with Vicky, and Vicky's clearly a heel with Andrade, and with Rose it's sort of ambiguous. I think ambiguous characters lead to ambivalence from fans, or just sort of a mucky mixed reaction that isn't as forceful as when as wrestling at its best is. You know, I mean, they don't hold game 7 of NHL playoffs in a neutral site. You put it in a building where everybody's, 98% of the people are cheering wildly for one team because that makes for a much better atmosphere. And in wrestling, you have the power to do that every week. So, of course you do it, almost always. And this is just kind of a mess. Same with Charlotte and Rhea Ripley. You know, it's just, you know, nobody is like strongly rooting for one or the other unless they're just sort of a fanboy for one of the two, regardless of their character, which is fine. But that's not what the promoter should be catering to.
I mean, without the ready baby faces, as you say, I mean, who could they have gotten ready baby face wise in a hurry? I mean, you could have done the Sheeta rematch. Riho is a former champion who's a pure baby face. I mean, Big Swole probably not good enough in the ring just yet. Jade is a heel and isn't far enough along. So, I mean, I think you just got caught up in the... Has Red Velvet had her shot yet? I mean, I guess she keeps doing jobs to Jade. So it's Cargill. So there's just nobody ready. And it's not the first time that's happened in wrestling, right? Where a promotion didn't have somebody ready for the new champion, heel or babyface. You know, I mean, I remember Ultimate Warriors winning the title from Hogan, and it was such an exciting thing back, what was that, 1990 maybe? And then what was the feud? Papa Shango. I mean, it was just, you know, they had no heels ready for the guy. They have no faces ready.
I mean, Sting, you know, after the Sting won the title in 1990, and, you know, it just he came out of the gate with weak opponents. I mean, you've got to, if you want someone to be a breakout star, you've got to have opponents for them that will draw the emotion, the opposite emotion you're wanting fans to give the person who's the star. And that, you know, it's tough. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but they certainly aren't there yet, and I'm not going to give them credit for something that isn't being handled well. And, you know, I mean, people are going to cheer Britt Baker, but it's going to be against the grain of how she's coming across on promos, and then that's going to work against if they want her to be a heel long-term, if they think they get some baby faces warmed up by putting her in a position to get cheered against a parent heel in Nyla Rose with Vicky. It's just a mess. It should be better. They should be in a better spot than this, but, you know, they are where they are, and it's not good.
Breaking news, it's going to be Becky Lynch.
Yeah. Boy, that'd be a big aid for sure.
That would be big, wouldn't it? All right. Well, I'm gonna let you guys go and have a great rest of your weekend.
Sounds good. Appreciate it. All right. I want to introduce a couple emails here in the flow of things. James in Clemson said, "I thought tonight was an excellent night for Dynamite. The main event absolutely delivered, and I appreciate the fact that the rest of the show never overshadowed the world title match. For example, Chris Jericho's music never played, so the fans would not get burned out singing Judas. The undercard was well-booked, and the matches only made it into third or fourth gear, but the main event was the only match allowed to go into fifth gear. The buildup was extremely well done. I refuse to believe that Christian was anything but sincere when talking to Jungle Boy. All in all, this was an excellent Dynamite that built to a climax that delivered. Kudos to Tony Khan and company." So, in contrast, Joe B. says, "Wade, I loved everything about AEW Dynamite tonight with the exception of your neighbor's dad, Ethan Page, and one other aspect. Kenny looked in better physical shape and like more of a star than he maybe ever has in AEW, and I thought Jungle Boy came across as a huge future star. The one thing I hated were those two stars in Jungle Boy and Kenny Omega not sending the show home with Kenny hurting from the match and still feeling strong with his four belts. But the show for some reason needed to go out with a 50-year-old long in the tooth, Matt Hardy and Christian in a pull apart. I thought it was demeaning to a really great, heavily hyped match of future stars from WWE washouts. Thanks." So Eric, you can respond to any aspect of that, but in particular, I'm curious what you think of the just Matt Hardy and Christian being the closing note after established Kenny top tier heel beating your up and coming babyface, and then in the end, it's a kind of a cluster of a bunch of people, including a focus on Christian Hardy.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was not as high on the show tonight as the gentleman from Clemson. I liked Paige and Hobbs. I liked the main event, but in terms of star power, the rest of the stuff was just struck me as filler, right? Not essential. It was matches to set up future matches and angles. As I said at the top of the show, I thought it was overbooked at the end. If they really wanted to keep the focus on Jungle Boy and Kenny and what they had just done, you would do exactly what the second emailer said. You would, you know, you'd have Kenny holding the belt and holding his ribs or whatever he would be selling, and you'd have a dejected Jungle Boy in the corner licking his wounds. Instead, we got sort of the overpacked thing, which that's just AEW.
Less is more, I think, would be something I would put, you know, tape up on the walls backstage in AEW when they're formatting shows, or I'd have, you know, Tony put a post-it note on his laptop. Just, you know, less is more, especially at the end of the show. I think this notion of you got to end on an adrenaline rush, it can be over leaned on too hard as sort of a truism. Just it's okay to have a world title match and have it end and have the champion celebrate and have his cohorts come out and celebrate with him. Let that be enough. You know, I think, by the way, I think I should have had opened the show by saying we have a world title match tonight, acted like it's a bigger deal. I don't think it should have been a passing comment after ring introductions for the opener. You know, it's a small critique, but I think when you do rarely feature a world title match, you should that should be the first thing you talk about at the top of the show. There should be a graphic, some announcing, the announcer's talking about it, and then you can quickly pivot to something else. And then the show should close with that, and that should be enough. We saw world title defense, the champ retained, end of story. That's it. You don't need to do this jumbled cluster of other things that are competing for your attention. I don't have that hard and fast rule for other things, but I think for major title matches, including women's singles and men's tag team, just end with that being enough. I think that sends a message. This is a big deal. We don't need to overbook this and split your attention in other ways.
I mean, I think they did do the main event promo after the first match, right? After Paige and Hobbs, they played some of that pretty well done Road 2 package that was on their YouTube page. So they did it. They just didn't do it quickly enough for your taste.
That's entirely my point. It's not that they didn't do it. It's that when you open by going, let's go to Alex Marvez in this really contrived situation where he goes, I'm waiting for Sammy Guevara. Oh, here he is. Well, gee, what a freaking coincidence. And then he starts asking a question and then, you know, Sean Spears attacks him. It's like, did you really need to lead the show with that? You have a world title match, a rarity for AEW. You have an AEW world title match on your show, and you decide to show us something involving Sean Spears, like because you're trying to get an angle in, you know, an angle in to promote next Wednesday's show or whatever. It's like, no, just come on. Just like the big deal is go to the announcers on camera and say, this is a special episode of Dynamite Saturday night, weeks in the making, show a split screen of Kenny Omega taping his wrists and Jungle Boy pacing or whatever you want to do. Set the stage, make it feel like this show is all about that, and it's too big not to begin by talking about it. You don't have an announcer say it in passing in between three other plugs during an opening match. Like, I just, that strikes the wrong tone. It's not an end-of-the-world type thing, but, my God, you want to protect your title. You want to protect your champion. You want to protect title matches and frame them differently, not as a passing comment while the action kicks off in the ring, which is what they did. They made up for it as show went on a little bit, but I would still say lead with it for sure.
I mean, I guess if you'd have just flipped those two segments and put the Sammy Guevara getting attacked, not that he was damaged for very long because he came in and made the save an hour later. If you flipped that with the plug for the main event, you'd have been okay with it?
Yeah. But I want the plug for the main event to be a split screen of Kenny and Jungle Boy, like in their locker room warming up. And I want the announcers to be on camera and look really serious. This is a big night. Like it's not about just the placement. I mean, that's a big part of it, obviously what I'm saying, but it's also give me that eye contact with the champion and the challenger and the graphic presentation. I saved the video package for later of Jungle Boy talking about it. I want the announcers to set the stage. This is a big night. You're going to want to stick around for this. I'm talking 12 seconds of time, but it should be the lead. You know, I think they buried the lead.
Okay. I mean, that's fair enough. I think they also went back to, they had the Christian patronizing Jungle Boy interview, pre-tape interview. I think it was pre-taped segment later in the show. So, I mean, they did, you know, a couple times remind people of what that main event was. I mean, they might not have followed the Wade Keller playbook, but I mean, I think I give AEW credit for not just one mention and done. They did come back to it. So
yeah,
which turned out to foreshadow the sort of Christian thing at the end, right? Christian coming out to make the save. I guess that was a callback to the promo in the middle of the show when Christian was simultaneously trying to buck up Jungle Boy and be sort of patronizing to him.
Totally. Yes, and you'll note my criticism was not they didn't hype it throughout the show. My criticism was lead with it. Don't say it in passing. That's the only thing I have a problem with. I think otherwise they did a fine job throughout the rest of the show. What about Kenny, Eric, and his look, his demeanor? I thought he looked in better shape. I think as the match was about to begin, Kenny seemed like a serious champion who was taking this seriously, and I need to see that. I want to know that Kenny's not all about yucking it up and just goofing or being a goof. And I want that little – I want some subtlety in his character that I can appreciate, like when the bell rings or when intros are going on and you have that world champion who's a confident but knows to keep his title, he's got to be serious. I think that's a big part of any kind of sports presentation, whether it's simulated or an actual sport. I thought Kenny And Jungle Boy, I love Jungle Boy pausing when he entered the ring and taking that deep breath, knowing this was a big moment. I believe that was legit. Like, I bought into that. Like, this is a big moment for him. He knows he's about to face the best in the world, biggest moment of his career. So those are little things that I like, where it's not just, I'm a performer and we're just here to entertain you and I'm going to go through the motions. We got that both from Kenny and JB tonight.
I mean, to me, the fact that they didn't have any outside interference, they did have the sort of nonsense of the first 2 minutes of booting everybody from ringside, which was great. I'm glad they did.
Yeah.
And then they did have a thing at the end where, you know, the Good Brothers come out and try and do a distraction or interfere, and they were cut off by Kazarian and Marco Stunt and Luchasaurus. I was just glad they didn't have any chicanery interference in this match, because I think that three-way match they had with Orange Cassidy, Pac, and Kenny headlining the last pay-per-view, well, it was the world title match on the last pay-per-view anyway, they had, what, the three or four belt shots that Kenny did, and it was just it was just too much.
Yeah.
And Kenny, I believe, has been battling a shoulder problem for quite a long time. He's talked about it. From time to time, you'll see him with the cupping marks on his shoulder. So maybe he's doing better, is able to get in better shape. I don't know. I know he's working hurt, as wrestlers do. He wasn't doing the goofy, silly faces. I mean, I think last week, they had a non-serious angle with the cart and Michael Nakazawa and Nakazawa getting left behind and Jungle Boy making his own save.
Yeah.
That was not – did not exactly I was looking forward to the match, but it was in spite of that angle, not because of it.
Yes.
And I wonder – and this is a question for you. Kenny is now in the second year of AEW, is their world champion, their top guy – and he's still being Kenny, and I think Kenny's just kind of a goofball at heart. Goofball, charitable, weirdo, the less charitable version of that. When Vince McMahon looks at that, is he like, wow, dodged a bullet there? I mean, I could never build my promotion around this guy.
I think Vince would have, because he's Vince McMahon and he can, would have found something in Kenny that he, a singular trait, that would have been what he built around, and for better or for worse. But there'd be something defined about Kenny that Vince built around. And if it didn't work, he would have changed. You know, I mean, that he does that. But he wants to let Kenny flounder and just sort of be Kenny. Because Kenny being Kenny isn't a top-tier act. Kenny being Kenny is a goof, a flake, a weirdo. And it's like he might be likable, he might not be likable, depending on your sensibility. But he's not a top guy. And AEW needs their top guy to present himself like a top guy, to expand their audience, to be part contributing to expanding their audience. And I think Vince would have tried to figure him out. But I do think Vince watching this, I wouldn't say he thinks he dodged a bullet, but I would think he's watching this going, you know, I don't feel like I missed a great opportunity by not over, you know, bidding more. I don't think he watches Kenny with jealousy. I don't think Kenny's done much that would make Vince McMahon, given what he looks for in a top star, I don't think Kenny's done much to make him jealous. And, you know, Kenny's not a tall guy. And I think Vince would notice that too and be like, what am I going to do with somebody who's, you know, not even 6 feet tall, who everyone thinks is the greatest guy ever?
Yeah, I mean, Kenny is a world-class worker, right? I mean, he's a top five
worker.
I think he still is.
Top five.
He's just not number one, right?
Top five is a really big statement, and working as injured as he has been and as infrequently in standout singles matches, I just think there's better bodies of work out there to knock him out of the top five. In terms of just like in general, what's he capable of when he's healthy based on his track record and some standout performances in AEW the past couple of years? I mean, it depends on your criteria, but top five is a strong statement with some of the work out there.
I mean, I'd put him behind Shingo Takagi and Ibushi and Will Ospreay before he got hurt. I'm not sure who else. I don't watch All Japan. I'm not sure who else. Who else I'd put in front of him?
Yeah. Well, anyway, go ahead with your point. Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, that was it. That was it. Yeah.
Oh,
what would Vince do, right? What does Vince think in hindsight now? Dodged a bullet. I mean, probably maybe Kenny is what then slotted into that AJ Styles role, or maybe even slightly lower than AJ, where, you know, Vince clearly respects AJ's ability to work and the sort of whatever one note AJ does with his usually heel mannerisms.
I think Kenny would be would be in a better place character wise with Vince McMahon, believe it or not, because I think Kenny's been so scattershot and just he hasn't been focused, and I think Vince would have got him focused on something. But I don't know. You know, I mean, it could be, you know, whatever he did with Kenny to focus him might have made Kenny fans very angry and moved Kenny down a notch from where he is in AEW. But Kenny's been just been a bumpy, unsteady road for Kenny in AEW. I mean, let's get crowds back. Let's see how they react. Let's see how he feeds off the crowds. Let him get healthy. You know, and I mean, a couple months ago he was in the ring and he couldn't even get through the ropes without wincing. You know, I mean, what he's done has been amazing considering that he's not at 100%. But, you know, it's pretty clear he's not at 100%. And we're seeing sort of, you know, the best of Kenny, you know, best of Kenny with V-triggers and all that. But he's not the same guy he was 4 years ago in the ring. And I don't know. I think he was so good then. I think it's pretty obvious he's pretty substantially below that now in terms of just his physical grace and ease with which he did these amazing things 3-4 years ago. Another email here, because we're talking about the world title match in Omega. Hinton says, I had a question about Jungle Boy. After seeing his backstage stuff with Kenny Omega last week and Christian this week, I can't help but feel like he's a bit underwhelming when it comes to promoting his matches or really having any sort of out-of-ring charisma. I can't quite put my finger on it, but he just has this lost look in his eyes, and I don't interpret it as naive, sympathy-generating babyface look either. What do you think? Are they trying too hard to protect Jungle Boy because he's not a bombastic person, he's soft-spoken? Should they give him a chance to grow, or is that not who he is? I mean, I think it's kind of when you watch Christian interrupt him, and then you watch Kenny last week interrupt him, and that Nakazawa nonsense, it's like, and, you know, they had the video feature, but he didn't say much there either. Should they put him in a position to grow more, or is it okay for someone to be a man of few words and soft-spoken, and if it's sort of working at the stage that you're at with him right now? I don't know the answer. I'm curious what you think, Art.
I mean, I think this is a company that likes to interrupt the baby faces. Has Sting even said a full sentence in his entire 7-month AEW run yet?
I think they're strategic in who they interrupt based on a history of losing your train of thought after the third sentence, but yeah, with Sting in particular. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're handling Jungle Boy correctly so far. Look, if you don't, Jungle Boy was on the indies. He was signed. I mean, his gimmick was that he didn't talk, right? I mean, I believe that was his gimmick for a while. I mean, we didn't hear him speak. And so, you know, they're sort of easing you into that. Oh, this guy actually can talk and here's what he says. And he's far less of a cartoon character because of it. And, Not everybody has to be the over-the-top bombastic type, right? Makes stand out in contrast. And I think, I mean, he's over huge, right, with the AEW crowd. Given who his father was and given how good-looking he is.
Which Kenny points out in every promo, which is interesting.
Yeah. He's got that crossover sort of mainstream potential, right? Like you could see him sitting on the Tonight Show and yucking it up if AEW were ever to get that high, you know, that high of a profile, and representing the company well. When you're good looking and you're athletic and you have and you're the son of a celebrity, I don't know that you necessarily. It'd be a bonus if he was maybe a little more further along in his promos, but he doesn't have to be because he's not the world champ and he's taken his journey to that route. And I for one, am here to see the journey, as Don Callis said at the end of the show, another great step on Jungle Boy's journey. It's let's look ahead. Now, that said, where was the guy, Orange Cassidy, the other hot flavor of AEW? He went from at the pay-per-view just, you know, less than a month ago, 3 weeks ago-ish, he went from a visual pinfall on Kenny Omega, the world champion, before Don Callis yanked the referee out of the ring, to in a feud with the Blade. Beware, Jungle Boy, beware.
No, it's Butcher. I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah. I probably screwed that one up too. Throw myself a pity party. Yeah. Yeah, watch out, Jungle Boy. They can only focus on one thing, not that many things at once, so you may be sliding down the card here.
Well, actually, I meant to say this earlier about Ross. He messed up after the early in the show when they did that angle. Let me find my note here on it. They went to Ross and Excalibur afterwards. Excalibur talked about the angle with FTR and Tully and Conan, all that, which I want to get to in a moment. And then Ross got this blank, lost look in his eyes and sort of stumbled and said, oh, yeah, this reminds me of Guevara and Spears. And it was kind of clunky with the wording, and he was searching for the names and what to reference. And then he talked about how the Pinnacle are among the most threatening factions he's seen. But it was not – it was kind of like, whoa, what's going on? Ross forgot what to say, forgot the names he's trying to think of, and he referred to an angle – that wasn't what just happened, and he didn't refer to what just happened, and it didn't seem like it was the right thing. So I think he was rattled by that, and that led to what we heard later, because he kind of screwed that up. And then probably somebody pointed out to him he screwed it up, probably did so rather diplomatically, and Ross just was, you know, perhaps, like I said, a little rattled or bitter when it came through the rest of the show. But that wasn't a great on-camera moment for JR. He looked a little bit lost. I mean, he recovered fine by the end, but that might have been what kind of triggered everything.
Yeah, don't make it about you, though, if you're the announcer. Make it about the performers. Get them over. Don't get yourself over. I mean, there was an incident within the last 3 weeks where Excalibur gently corrected him on something and bit his head off. So it's not like this is the first time. This is a recurring theme.
Yeah.
He steps in it a lot.
Yep. No, I mean, yeah. I mean, anyway, the other point you said, I'd like to see, or I bet Jungle Boy could yuck it up on a talk show. I, you know, the whole point is, can Jungle Boy yuck it up? And I think that's Hinton's point. Is there a personality there? Because if you want to sell tickets, you don't want to be a wrestler. You can be good looking, you can be athletic and all that. But I mean, I guess I kind of want to reiterate Hinton's question. Are you seeing a grain of a personality that they can build on with Jungle Boy, or is he just kind of too boring or too laid back to be what he could be if he had a little more bombast, a little more spark? Because it does seem like he's just a super chill, man a few words guy. You can do something with that in pro wrestling with everything else he has going for him. But when you said yucking it up on a talk show, I'd like to see him loosen up and yuck it up in any context. But we just haven't really seen that. He's been just sort of a guy in this Jurassic thing, and now we're hearing a little bit from him, but not much. So I think that's what he's getting at is he have something that we've seen that would – where you can envision him loosening up and yucking it up?
Well, that's the beauty of having 2 hours of TV a week, and a guy being on his journey. He doesn't have to be the fully polished package today. I mean, you know, hot people don't have to have as good of a personality as people who are less attractive in life, generally speaking. I think is you could on a talk show, you can fake it, right? You can fake that. You can have a Red Bull before you go on. You can do the fake. Fake yuck it up. It's all pre-produced anyway, right? The hosts do the producers do the pre-interview, and then the host has the notes, and you're being walked through what amounts to a wrestling match, right? It's just you're walked through the spots,
totally.
The questions they asked you. So Jungle Boy went from wrestler who did not speak, that was his gimmick early on, to, hey, if we want to push this guy, he's going to talk. He's from he's a California kid. I imagine he's maybe laid back naturally. And his father was the sort of hot looking James Dean type when he was on 90210, right? I mean, he wasn't like an effusive guy. He can get there, right? And maybe, and that's the journey. Maybe he gets there. Maybe he's the AEW champion, and maybe not. Maybe his ceiling becomes TNT champion, right? But that's what I like about AEW is I feel like there is actually a chance for people like Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy and Jungle Boy to have upward momentum and go as far as their merits take them, and they're not just penciled in by a old man who's lost considerable speed off his fastball and hasn't created a new star since John Cena.
Yeah. Well, I think Roman Reigns is a star right now, but we'll see what his drawing power is other than trying to keep 2 million people tuning in on Fridays, which has been a struggle. But I think you could make the case Roman is a star at this point. But it depends on your definition of what you meant by star in the context of what Cena has done recently. I think with JB, I'm with you. He doesn't have to be everything he's going to be. I think the issue is, are we seeing signs of something he can be? Or is this all we're ever going to get? And I think that's reason for concern, but you've got something valuable in him, and I think they did a really nice job with what they have tonight. The question is, in 3 years, can you imagine, based on what you've seen so far, what he'll grow into? And if not, that's fine, but the answer is no. If the answer is, oh, yeah, there was that moment here and a moment there, I think they can build on that, that's more helpful. Makes me more optimistic, but the lack of it doesn't mean it won't happen. But I think the answer is there's not much to go on yet in terms of what his personality will be other than what we've seen now. And I think what we've seen so far is somewhat limiting of how big he can become.
I mean, as long as the fans are chanting along to his song and chanting along in the middle of the match, that buys you some time.
Yeah, totally.
He's way
yeah,
over.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But at the same time, you know, if in 2 years, he does nothing more than say a few words and gets interrupted on promos, I doubt they're building the company around him. And I just think, you know, that's sort of the point. I think fans are along for the journey, but I think they want to see some growth. And they want to see, you know, this kid turn into something that is more defined. So speaking of which, Zach in Texas said, Jungle Boy graduated to Jungle Man tonight. What a match between him and Omega. They built up over a few weeks, and it delivered. That's the difference between AEW and WWE. WWE's product is like microwave food. Some of it's still frozen in the middle. Yuck. AEW is like a slow cooker simmering for 6 to 8 hours and letting all the flavors meld. As soon as Jungle Boy lost, announcers. If anyone didn't think Jack Perry was a tough man or whatever the phrase was, you know, he proved it tonight. And you do. I love Journey. Years ago, I started talking about how, you know, wrestling fans tune into wrestling not to just see what's happening today, but to invest in a journey of wrestlers. And the key is to show upward mobility and downward mobility. You know, wins and losses have to matter, and people have to improve over time and also lose their traction and lose their groove over time and fight to get back on it. So this was a chapter in the journey of Jungle Boy, and I think fans are certainly some people were rooting for him to win. It's probably naive to think he was going to win the world title, but AEW did a pretty good job convincing people who were open to be convinced that maybe there could be a big upset tonight. But it's a step on the journey, you know, it's a step on a journey for him. And I do think this, you know, Jungle Man or whatever. Yeah, this was Jungle Boy showing he can be credible and keep up with Kenny, although I think Kenny would probably be the first, well, I don't know if he'd be the first day. Maybe he would, maybe he won. That Jungle Boy definitely contributed to helping Kenny look like $1 million tonight, too, because JB's the type of opponent you want to be in the ring with, because he's going to make things easier for you, because I think he's that good.
Yeah, I think Jungle Boy doesn't become Jungle Man until he wins the AEW title.
We'll see. Maybe he becomes Jungle Man when he, like, turns 30. Maybe we'll reserve that. All right, Zach also says, prayers to Tully Blanchard. He brought a plastic knife to a gunfight and Conan destroyed him. It wasn't just K-Dog, though. Everyone's promo game was kind of on another level tonight. Even Vicky did an effective job for both Andrade and Nyla. Her screeching, excuse me, can be grating, but it's a heel magnet. So a couple things there, Zach introduced Eric. Conan felt like he started, like, had some things to say, and then it was almost Mr. T at the Hall of Fame. Like, whoa, okay. And even Tully tried to interrupt, and Conan's like, it's nice you want to talk, but I'm not done yet, so back away. I love Tully, by the way, standing there and not blinking. Like, he was 4 inches from Conan when Conan talked over him and, you know, wouldn't let him interrupt. Tully wasn't meek. He didn't show any weakness, and he just stood there because Tully's Tully. He's a legend. He's Four Horsemen, and I thought they looked Tully by not backing down – looked up to the task of just absorbing Conan, almost to me starting to ramble and get a little long-winded and a little off course with incarceration rate statistics. And apparently North Carolina and FTR have become activists for the vegan diet. Like, just out of nowhere, he's talking about fake meat as some sort of comeback against FTR. It was just, like, out of nowhere. So I didn't really know what to make of that. I thought that there were aspects of what Conan did that were strong and good, and others just came across as somebody sort of rambling randomly off the task. What'd you think?
I've been waiting to break this promo down. First of all, let's give Conan a round of applause, because I believe he was potentially on death's door. I mean, I think he had COVID, and does he have chronic kidney problems, I believe?
Yep.
And earlier this year, he wasn't doing his podcast. There was an open question about whether this guy's going to make it. And there he was in the ring standing up.
Eric, sorry to interrupt real quick. I thought he wasn't going to make it to the end of the promo, because he was like Shane McMahon out there. He was sweating profusely, and his hand was starting to shake. Like, I think he got like really worked up, or he was nervous to be on national live television again, or I don't know. But like, the sweating and the shaking was starting to freak me out by the end too.
Yeah, I mean, so Conan got the better of Tully in the promo, because at the end of the day, Conan was going to be the one laid out, right, in the dastardly attack by the heels. And so that, from a booking standpoint, that all made sense. That said, the promo itself was probably a Wade Keller nightmare in terms of political incorrectness or unwokeness. Well, there was the sheep effer joke about men in North Carolina, which is probably not up your alley. There was the vegan beef thing, which I don't even understand that. I don't quite get that. Are you less manly if you don't eat meat? Is that sort of the... I don't think you could look at FTR and think those two boys don't eat a lot of protein.
Vegans get plenty of protein, Eric. That's kind of silly.
Your soy, the soy can be cooked many ways. Anyway, then the third part.
Soy is a very small part of my diet. But go ahead.
You are going to live longer than I will, for sure. There is no doubt about that as a meat eater. The third part of the promo that was super weird was the comment that your grandchildren – you better learn Spanish, because your grandchildren are going to be speaking it. And it took me a half of a beat, and I finally got it. Tully's daughter is Tessa Blanchard, and I believe she's married to a wrestler, Daga, from Mexico.
Yeah.
I think – now – the average audience member is not going to have any clue about that. That's one of those insidery things that I know drives you up the wall. We've got three sort of un-PC things, and then he's got the more, I'm not using this as a pejorative, the more woke thing about the people of color incarceration rates, which was, he was saying that's a bad thing that North Carolina does that, I think. And there was a lot going on here. There totally was.
Your recap for people who didn't see the show, like, those are like the bullet points, like, that North Carolina, the men are the sheep run scared from the men, and that vegan meat, something about vegan meat, again, like you said, how FTR, like, I mean, plenty of vegan athletes and MMA fighters who are full of muscle and get plenty of protein without eating, factory farm slaughtered cows in order to get their protein. There's a million ways to get protein, and people who are vegan get that. And it was a very weird thing so I don't mean to stereotype that FTR can't be vegans, because maybe one of them are, and I don't know it. But it's not, like, established as such.
Right.
And it's certainly not, like, a heel – like, it's not a babyface thing to say in this day and age that if you eat Impossible Burgers or Beyond Meat on your pizzas, which are fantastic substitutes for cooked cow flesh in every way, in terms of taste and texture and health, somehow that makes you a babyface to be against that, when the heels you're lashing out at aren't established as that. I was waiting for some sort of comeback, because it was hilarious when FTR, like, oh, we grew up in the mean streets of North Carolina, just like you guys. We know what it's like growing up Santana Ortiz with – and it's sort of a laugh line. You don't think of North Carolina that way. And Conan had a lot of ways he could have gone at that. And I just thought it was, like, all over the place and weird and clumsy and a sheep sex joke. Like, really? Like, what? So, yeah, anyway, go ahead, Eric.
When I think of vegan athletes, I think of Zack Sabre Jr., who has like SpongeBob SquarePants noodle arms. He's a great worker, right? He's really good at grappling and
I think he'd have SpongeBob
wrestling, but he is not exactly a heavyweight, I guess.
Well, you can look up vegan athletes online when we're done with the show, and you can see that Zach David Jr. would probably be tall and lanky, just like I was while he was eating meat and when he wasn't.
Okay. Conan also did suggest Tully would be a Walmart greeter. That was maybe the most accessible line.
That was totally, yes. Totally the most accessible line. Did Tully
get lost? I thought Tully got lost. Like Tully spoke for a little bit when it was his turn to talk, and then I don't know if he didn't hit the right lines or he was nervous, and then Conan went on a little bit more before his guys came out, or what he thought were his guys.
Yeah, well, I think Tully was maybe a little thrown. I don't know if Tully knew all that was coming his way, because it's hard to imagine that went through the promo screeners, if AEW has such a thing. You know, if Conan says, yeah, here's the 4 points I'm going to make, and it's like, really? You sure? But Tully, you know, said, I know about Spanish, and I've researched you, and you don't know who you're dealing with me. And he got in his face, and I mean, Tully didn't have a lot of words to say, but, you know, he just said, we're going to, you know, FTR are going to end the game. I mean, I thought Tully was fine. I don't think he was going to score points with witty comments, but I think just demeanor-wise, he stood there in the face of Conan and like let Conan just run his mouth. And I think in the end, Tully standing there saying nothing made him actually look better. But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was weird.
To the Fix next week to listen to you, to Todd Martin break that down, because I imagine he has thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, well, anyone who has thoughts are welcome to send them. As for Vicky Guerrero, I vote no. I think that was a tired, overplayed shtick. It's cartoonish. AEW should be looking to break away from looking like you're bringing ex-WWE people in to do the best of their WWE or the worst of or whatever. They're tired, drawn out things. I know this. It sounds like I might be being hard on Vicky when I say this, but I'm not. Vicky's too talented to lean on that tired verbal trope. Like, she can be better than that, and she ought to be better than that. So I'm just down on it. I don't want her to ever say excuse me again. I mean, you can say, well, there's a happy medium. I'm just saying I'm willing to just say do away with it completely so that she can come up with something fresher and better. I don't think it's a main event act. And she's with Nyla Rose, who's challenging for the women's title. She's with Andrade, who they aspire to be a main event heel. I think Vicky comes across as a cartoonish mid-card act when she does that. And I'd much rather see a more mature, refreshed version of that.
Oh, yeah, you'll get no argument from me there. The Dante Martin versus Matt Sydal match, but Matt Sydal singles record this year, 9-3. That's the softest 9-3, I think, that I can think of off the top of my head. But you know, he came out and interrupted Andrade El Idolo's attempt at a promo, and so I imagine that sets up Matt versus Andrade as his first match, and you'd be putting Andrade in there with a really good worker who's going to make Andrade look good in his debut. So we'll be getting that match down the road. Hopefully Vicky is not given mic time before that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, we lost a couple of callers as I was trying to fit an email because I felt guilty. I haven't been doing emails the last couple of shows I hosted. But we do have time to transition here to Javier, PW Torch contributor, who joins us most often at the end of post shows. Javier, we have talked about a lot. We have not talked about everything. I'm curious for your take on things. How are things going?
Things are going fairly well. I think I'd rather be
tough week for your town.
Oh yeah, that definitely tough. prayers and. Yeah, so, that's like, yeah. I think it's 10 miles due east of me, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty nearby, and I believe I had on my brother's wife's side, she had family that lived, like, in that area, like, across the street, that building, so, I mean, they moved away since, but, yeah, don't know if they knew anybody there, involved there.
Yeah.
As far as the show, I thought it was, I agree. It was okay. I didn't think it was like anything spectacular, but I did want to talk about the main event. Cause it kind of like finally dawned on me something a lot of people complain about. And it like really struck for me in this match. Cause I thought it was a good match, but watching it, my brain kind of broke it down analytically, and I'm like, you know what? They're not really selling. You know, it feels like it was done like very New Japan style in the way that it was structured, but without like the selling in between the moves. And I'm like, if this match had gone like an extra 3 to 5 minutes and you just filled that time with them selling and you know, selling the impact of the moves, I thought this would have been a much better match than what it was.
I think you nailed it. The in New Japan, they have the fighting spirit thing where maybe you get hit with a move, but you pop right back up and you clothesline your opponent. But then what happens is you both collapse to the mat and you sell for 30 seconds, right? 45 seconds a minute. And we didn't have that here. And that almost assuredly was due to the time crunch. And if they would have made good on their, we're going to go over the top of the hour if we have to, you know, three times they plug that, they hit that note to make you think, maybe they would have a really long epic match, and they didn't do that. I mean, the match was very good. I liked it. I'd go 4 stars on it. It wasn't going to hit anything, and my scale is probably more inflated than Wade's, I imagine, because Wade's a pretty tough grader historically. But I think Javier nailed it with his point that they didn't sell long enough.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it felt perhaps a little compressed. Yeah, I didn't have it 4 stars, but I'd be 3.5, 3.75, and I think that's an equal compliment, Eric, to you saying 4 stars, because I think I do generally grade a 0.5 star, so lower than most people, and 3/4 to 2 stars lower than Sean Radican. But anyway, sorry, Sean. Go ahead, Javier. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little, but maybe 1.5 stars on average. I think 4 star. 4.25 and 4.5 star matches are handed out sometimes like candy. And to me, I 3.5 is a very nice compliment. And sometimes 4.25 is, very often 4.25 is 3.5. But it's so subjective. I mean, who's to say? Anyway, go ahead, Javier.
Yeah, I would say 3.25. I don't do quarters, so I would round it down. But yeah, that's the thing. Like,
fair enough, yeah.
In its component pieces, though, like, could have been better if you just had that selling, you know, which is, I finally caught it. It was an interesting, like, everything slowed down and it made sense. I am getting such a kick out of Miro. God's
yes. Oh, I love
champion.
Oh, his that, line about, you know, thank God for giving me the power to destroy people, and thank God for making my hot wife flexible. I mean, his dry delivery of some of the best one-liners in the business are fantastic. I mean, I just absolutely love the Miro character right now. But I think he's effectively being a heel while also being hilarious. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, Mike, I agree. I was glad I wasn't taking a sip of water when he said that line, because I would have done a spit take like I was a cartoon character about his hot wife. Question. Is Miro writing that stuff, or is he just saying lines?
Oh, I think he is.
You do?
I do. I think that's his – I think that is his natural wit. I've gotten the sense of that. Javier, do you know, or do you have a different feeling on that?
The very little bit I've seen outside of, you know, WWE and stuff, that is kind of his ballpark. So it could very, very well be something that he came up with, or, you know, brainstormed with, like, whoever's, you know, he's work, you know, bouncing out ideas off of, that sort of thing. But it definitely sounds like something in his wheelhouse.
Yeah. 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 What else?
Well, and what I liked about the character, because, yeah, you mentioned that, you know, it's the way that he feels dangerous, you know, because he's saying this stuff and it's funny, but, like, I don't know, it's like he comes across unhinged saying it. So, I feel badly for Brian Pillman Jr. So I'm worried for him because it's just creepy, because last week with him coming up to save Penelope, or supposedly save Penelope, and it was because, you know, you know, with the whole Kip thing, she's alone because of him, but it's really cool. The character that he's portraying and really off-putting, which is why it's cool.
Yes. Yep.
And as a matter of fact,
Miro went from someone who was going to be a mid-card comedy joke, just being self-indulgent and defining himself down with the whole video game obsession and Kip Sabian and insider humor and just trying to make himself crack up and all that. And he subtracted some, but mostly he just added sort of a serious viciousness while still, you know, treating us to his dry wit. And then, like, I just thought, was it last week he had the squash match and it was just all serious, just destruction. And it just shows, you know, whatever. And I know, I mean, it's just the whole thing of thank you, God, for making me powerful enough to destroy, you know, I mean, it's just funny, you know, just kind of in a subversive way, making fun of, you know, athletes who do that in a way that is sometimes, you know, a little eye rolling. So he seems aware of that. And then I was capitalizing on it.
And so I'm glad that they announced two things for the show I'm going to. The coffin match between Ethan Page and Darby Allin, and the South Beach strap match between Cody and QT Marshall. Can you guess which one I'm more excited for?
Well, you've been a big QT Marshall fan all along, Javier. You've been trying to convince me he isn't the saltine cracker of wrestlers.
I have tried to convince you some crazy stuff, but not that one.
Right. Yes.
I'm really curious because I think by putting South Beach on it, I am wondering if there's going to be some sort of because isn't like the Texas bull rope the one we have to touch the four corners?
Yeah.
I believe the South Beach stipulation means they can't eat carbs in the week before the match. Why do we have two gimmick matches on the same show? Javier, why? It seems like if you have a gimmick match, you want to make that a one-per-show thing, and they've got two, a coffin match and a strap match. It feels a bit like overkill, like you've got all these shows coming up and you're going to be on the road. Why not put Ethan Page and Darby in a different week with the coffin match so you spread out the gimmickry?
I mean, I'm guessing it's trying to sell tickets would be my guess. I haven't checked out the place.
They were sold out for the capacity of the Knight Center, and I think there are, you know, they've got about 2,700 tickets sold the last time I looked online. So you might be right, but just, you know, to the one of AEW's chronic problems is that since there's so many cooks in the kitchen and there's lots of guys booking their own stuff, you tend to sometimes see repetitive spots, repetitive finishes, because people aren't talking to each other as much as they should, or there's not one coordinator to make sure they're not doing the same thing three times. So it just strikes me as odd to have, you know, it lessens the impact of the gimmick match when you've got more than one of them on a particular show.
Yeah, because I'm looking at it right now, and yeah, there's a good decent amount of seats available. So that would be my guess why they're trying to pack that up. So that would be my guess. I texted my brother about the coffin match. I'm like, you know, let's hope that Darby's safe, because you know a stipulation like that, you know, I could picture him doing something completely crazy.
Oh God, yeah, I know. Tony Khan's got to be rein him in. You know, I mean, you do not want a scandal because Darby takes it a step too far. You know, I mean, and but you know, go ahead.
In particular, since they've been talking a lot about the body bag incident, that he had hit him with something while he was in the body bag, supposedly he got hurt really bad.
Yeah.
I think the finish to that match, I can't see them putting Ethan Page over because he's just a, you know, obnoxious mid-card heel. Is Darby hitting the coffin drop and rolling him, assuming it's a traditional coffin match, rolling him into the coffin and closing the casket, and he wins the match? That would be my guess how that is finished. One of the questions I have is whether does Darby learn from his mistake, his fatal, his miscalculation in the two-on-one match, and does he allow Sting to accompany him to ringside for his Road Rage match on July 7th?
Well, I think he does the coffin drop into the coffin onto Ethan Page.
Yikes.
Which is my concern, because that sounds like it might be a dangerous kind of thing, and that kind of seems like what's kind of set up for that to happen when you're doing that.
I just want Darby to know that he is valued for other reasons other than putting his body at great risk for us, and just like we value Vicky for more than the nostalgia for screeching, excuse me. There's a lot to Darby that's marketable and can go on for a very, very long time. And we don't need him to try to top himself or constantly put his body at risk. And like I said, hopefully Tony Khan can see the marketability of Darby and without excessive and overly frequent bodily harm or great risk as part of that.
Yes, let's have one Mick Foley and not a second.
Yeah, yeah. What else, Javier?
I don't know if I have not been paying too much attention to it, but has it been every single time that Marvez is interviewing somebody, there's an attack? That's been an ongoing joke for a while now, right?
Yeah, it's a very high ratio. I mean, when AW Dynamite started, there wasn't an interview that didn't get interrupted by an attack. Like almost, I don't know what the streak was, but it's like, I'm exaggerating only slightly, but it was like 17 out of 21 promos the first like 4 weeks were interrupted within 30 seconds. It was just crazy. And yeah, Marvez is, you know, if you're being interviewed by Marvez, you might want to watch your back. I don't like contrivances. Like, I don't like false pretense in life, and I don't like the false pretense of Marvez going, well, you went to me live outside the building here. I'm awaiting Jungle Boy. Oh, look, here's Jungle Boy. Like, what a freaking coincidence. Like, just stop that stuff. Just have Marvez go, we just saw Jungle Boy arrive. Here he comes. That's fine. Why do you have to lie to us and pretend you don't know he's going to be there and then have Marvez have to act surprised at something he's not surprised at? It feels inauthentic. It feels like you're lying to us enough on a wrestling show by selling punches. Don't lie to us by having the announcer pretend he doesn't know he's about to interview the guy because he didn't know he was going to show up. An annoyance of me. But I've grown to enjoy, if nothing else, MJF making fun of Alex Marvez.
And Jericho.
Yeah, well, pretty much, Pretty much everyone does. But Jericho ever call him Pig Vomit? I mean, that was his nickname for Marvez tonight. So,
wow. Jericho had a whole streak there. None of it springs to mind, but something about his head being fat.
Yeah, I'd say Pig Vomit is it's tough to top that.
Yeah, well, a Howard Stern reference there.
Yeah.
One of the things I haven't been liking about the Pinnacle thing is when they looked like they were going to these single, you know, break up and to do a bunch of single stuff, I was kind of really hoping that each individual group had stayed, that they wouldn't have like these brawls that's like most of the group against each other, and they just really stick to singles for a bit. Because when you had both the Blood and Guts and the Stadium Stampede match, and now you're still brawling as a group, I'm like, what's the, you know, it does lead credence to the idea of like, why did you go to the Blood and Guts first instead of having the individual issues later? You know what I mean? So I was hoping more to see them like each take on their own guy, and then maybe you revisit like a group thing down the road. But the fact that they had like this brawl again of, you know, the three versus three was kind of like, you know, I don't know, wasn't too it feels like they're just kind of spinning wheels there.
Well, they're doing the whole thing in reverse, right? They started with the most, you know, epic sort of match, the War Games. Yeah, Blood and Guts, sorry. Copyright. And then they went to the Stadium Stampede, which was like a step down, and now they're breaking it into individual matches. So the whole thing has been backwards. So I'm just trying to roll with it. I think what are we on Wednesday? We're getting MJF and Sammy, and I know they're trying to give Sammy a little bit of a push, but there's no way he's going to beat MJF. I don't think. I guess they could. You know, they're clearly grooming MJF for another match with Jericho. I assume at the All Out pay per view would be my guess. And so I guess you could have Jericho interfere to help Sammy beat MJF and keep Sammy's momentum going. But what are the finishes there? I mean, it certainly seems like if traditional booking is MJF cheats to win and it cools Sammy off in the process.
Yeah, I haven't thought about it, but as you talk about it, I'm curious what they do. I guess AEW likes to do finishes. You know, I mean, they're not they don't have a reputation for overdoing it on cop out, you know, DQs or, you know, even a blatant interference leading to a finish. But this might be one of those exceptions they make considering the timing of this match. One of the low points of the show for me was Sammy got a great response. And I'm a fan of Sammy Guevara as a heel. It turns out a little bit about him being, I won't say an effective babyface, because I think he'll be effective because of the journey that fans have been on with him. And he's part of, Inner Circle and Friends of Jericho and all that. But his promos, there was a couple on AEW Dark that really stood out last year where he was kind of testing the waters, and oh my God, were they bland. And tonight he goes, the crowd's chanting Sammy, Sammy. They're going nuts. They're ready for him to just give it back to MJF. And his line is, this Wednesday, the company finds out what I already know. They chose the wrong guy for the action figures and the posters. Like, what? The lead babyface is fighting to prove that he should have had an action figure and not MJF. Was that the message, Javier?
Well, I get the action figure part because there is a culture around that, which I'm only like tangentially aware of. So,
But you don't want your babyface talking about it like it matters to him. That's not cool. It's cool to collect action figures, but you don't want to get in a fight with a fierce rival to prove Tony Khan wrong that you should have had an action figure. Like, I'm not demeaning it. It just shouldn't be the first thing a babyface says in the heat of a moment in a violent feud with somebody.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. But I was about to say that, you know, but when you're in this...
Javier, then I'll edit the show and I'll take out my interruption and stealing your thunder. So go ahead. I apologize. Go ahead. Pretend the last 40 seconds didn't happen.
Yeah, because I was about to say that. You know what you were saying, that when it's this hot of an angle and, you know... this is out of
rude.
Angle.
You don't have to keep
this went off the rails. that was the movie. So,
I've broken you.
That part you might have to edit out.
Just like I broke. Just like I broke to Todd with the Velcro discussion.
Yeah, that was fun, by the way. I was surprised that you were so anti-Velcro. Eric, you've known him for a while. Did you know that about Wade?
I know he doesn't like to eat meat, but I did not know about the aversion to Velcro.
Yeah.
Let me speak up for Sammy here. I think the broader point there the broader point was, you know, I've known the company should have pushed me and not you. I'm the bigger star from the beginning. The examples are action figures and posters, right? I think it's a sub point examples to prove his overarching argument, which is, you know, I didn't get it. I should have gotten the push, not you.
But MJF's been a heel. Sammy's been a heel. They've both gotten mega pushes. The last thing you want as a babyface is to make it seem like the brand that you work for, that is beloved by its fans, are choosing MJF over him. It's meta. Second of all, it's complete nonsense. It doesn't make – why would a babyface say this company is so delusional as they take this awful human being that is MJF, who just attacked Dean Malenko and then doubled down on it. They're choosing to market him? Like, why would you want one of your rising young babyfaces to frame your company – as pushing MJF more, which I don't think the average viewer thinks is even true, because MJF and Sammy have been pushed pretty equally.
I think MJ's gotten a far bigger push than Sammy. MJF's got, you know, got the world title match against Moxley. He got the big win over Cody. Did he got the win over Jericho, did he not, right?
You know what? So MJF's been winning matches, big singles matches, and Sammy thinks he should have gotten a bigger push. You can make a kayfabe case for it, a Pro Wrestling Illustrated 1980s magazine case for it. Sammy, go run some big-time matches and win them.
I will concede your meta point.
Yeah.
That might be where it doesn't work because, you know. Yep.
Well, right. And I was just thinking in particular when his MJF's response to that could be, well, maybe you should have done business with Impact.
Yeah.
So
Sammy
yeah,
is sensitive about that.
I'd have popped for that.
Yeah, but you're not the audience they're striving.
No.
They got
sure.
you, Eric. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and the thing is with the whole thing, I kind of, it feels like they should be building up that rivalry between MJF and kind of like phasing Jericho out of it between MJF and Sammy Guevara, because I think that, you know, they're the future. And when MJF said that he refuses to have a match with Jericho, that then he would pick on Sammy, thinking that Sammy's weak. So I think overall, I'd prefer to see that pairing rather than go see, MJF and Jericho go at it again.
What else, Javier? What else stood out show tonight?
I think one of the things that felt like the most WWE stuff thing today for me anyway was Vicky coming out with Andrade and saying, you know, here's the big announcement, and then Tidal comes out, and they never go back to that.
I still want to know what Roman Reigns is going to do. That's unprecedented. Will we ever know?
Yeah, so I mean that I don't know that just it rubbed me the wrong way because because I was expecting then Andrade to attack Seidel to set up, and I'm sure it probably end up leading into a match between Seidel and Andrade, but it was like he then just like walks out and you know, and in a show with so many post match attacks, that was like the one that most deserved one.
Yeah.
Any idea what it might be? Because I mean, I don't think they've like dropped any hints.
No, is there necessarily going to be one, or was it just setting up an angle?
Yeah, like in the movies, I think they call that a MacGuffin, right? It's this sort of thing that sets the plot in motion, but you know, they never really come back to it, or doesn't pay off.
They did that Friday night with Roman, you know, when Edge interrupted. I just puts heat on the baby faces. Like, can you just run out 8 seconds later after the announcement's made? Do you have to keep interrupting? Who'd they do that with? Daniel Bryan involved in that last year where some big announcement was going to be made and it just kept getting interrupted? And it's like, stop it. Or was it Kevin Owens? Somebody, I can't remember what it was. It was just like, stop.
Yeah, I think it was Daniel Bryan. I think it was Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
You've got to get viewers by hook or by crook.
Anyway, go ahead.
I
don't have an answer.
Yeah, because I think the idea was that it almost felt like he was teasing that he was going to retire, and then he kept getting interrupted, and then you know Jade. It's weird because Jade's beginning to grow on me because of these vignettes they've been doing, and they've been building up her character, and I'm kind of frustrated because if they did that with more people on the roster, we'd you know be more into their characters.
She's growing on you because she's good at playing a very specific role where it's really clear how you feel about her, because she's portraying somebody who you want to see get her comeuppance or get humbled, and she's obnoxious. And Mark Sterling is, I think, a really good. I know it's sort of, you know, conventional to be like, oh, anti-Mark Sterling, and it's dumb. It's like, no, this worked out really well. Mark Sterling is not the alpha. He is a hanger-on. He's a little closer to Paul Heyman to Roman and Heyman's current thing, which is like, I want to keep her satisfied. But he's also kind of the mover-shaker agent type who lacks much skill other than sort of being the hanger-on who's all about maximizing money and being a deal-maker. And you have a heel who's all about hashtags and marketing and getting her name out there, and he's willing to do all the hard work. I mean, he's like much more of a manager than like most wrestling managers are. And so this it didn't work before because we didn't know who Jade was or what she stood for, how we're supposed to feel about her. And now it's clear. So I just think they really got her on course. What have you thought, Eric, the last month or so with her?
They're bringing her along slowly, which is probably for the best. I think she's still pretty green inside the ring. Imagine her matches are really, really produced, right?
yes.
Jade's not calling it in the ring, right? Jade is closer to the DDP. Let's Randy Savage, Ricky Steamboat, WrestleMania 3 match where we're going to plot out everything. And that's okay. I mean, had the luxury of bringing her along, and you've got a heel champion now, so I don't really know that you want to go to the heel dynamic. They're doing it now with Britton and Nyla. Bring her along for a year, and then maybe Britt drops the belt, you get a babyface champion, and then Jade can get her first shot. Maybe that's where she takes her first loss, right? I don't want to say make her the woman version of Goldberg, but I'd protect her for as long as possible and, extract the maximum payoff.
Javier, what else?
I do have to defend Jim Ross on calling Blade Butcher, because while I was watching the match, I was just saying Butcher in my head too. So that was...
I was wearing a Butcher apron, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't think that
was not an egregious error on Jim Ross's part. No way. That was not an egregious error. He gets flack for that. He doesn't watch Dark, probably, so.
The Hangman Page, I'm kind of, do we need four people in the booth? Because they do that way too much. And I was, the first, match was like, oh, they're just, for moments that I'm like, is Excalibur off this week? And then, he talks, after, not talking for, a full minute because there are four people talking. It was it's getting a little bit annoying having so many people on commentary.
They don't have a traditional main play-by-play guy and a traditional color guy. And it's been a long time, and there's more tension than chemistry. It collectively in kind of a weird way works, but there's moments or matches or shows where it works less. And it feels a bit like a house of cards, the chemistry of who's going to talk when and what they're going to contribute. I enjoyed making a big deal, Ross encouraging Shivani to call a move like a dive by its proper lucha name that Excalibur usually does, and Shivani got a kick out of it. And I like when they seem to be having fun together. I think you want that, you want to get the sense that people don't really dislike each other. I like Eric, despite some conflicts that we have on the air about, issues or conversations, and same thing with all the people I work with. We can debate stuff and even poke each other a little bit, but but you want to think they don't just carry it with them through the rest of the day and they're mad, and sometimes I sense that, it's not that they're not going out for drinks afterwards necessarily, or they're hoping to get a few drinks at Ross so he can loosen up a little bit.
I think, was it Don Callis who said they have a 2.5-man booth cutting Shivani? I mean, so he said that, and he was, taking a shot at Tony's manhood. But the truth is, Tony Schiavone really only says he'll react to a heel like Taz or Don Callis. He will exclaim something, right? Sort of be the amen corner, amen chorus. And then sometimes Tony Khan will get in Tony Schiavone's ear, and Tony will make a point that has clearly been fed to him. But that's it. I mean, Tony Schiavone does not say a whole lot of a lot. And I think he's acknowledged this, right? That he's just sort of there to be the exclamation guy that everybody loves.
And they use him more on interviews on camera for that reason, because Excalibur, for some ridiculous reason, wears a mask and no one ever explains it. Ross, I think he did a really good job of the Andrade thing, and that was all post-produced. But Shivani's the guy you want standing in the ring or standing backstage to kind of make a segment feel a little bit, it's a little more loftier than it's like when Graves or Cole stand in the ring, you think, oh, this is a little more important than, if it's just the normal interviewers doing a normal interview. So I think that, it's useful, and there's some cachet with him.
Yeah, Tony helped get Britt Baker over. So, I mean, that may be his best contribution so far. And, you know, and the Sting hype, those would be his top two things so far, I think.
Yes. Go ahead, Javier.
I haven't heard it in a while, so I don't know if it's still an ongoing joke, but on his podcast, that's kind of the thing that all he contributes is, you're right, JR. That's the biggest contribution to the show.
Yeah.
Last thing I got, because I think there's nothing else on the show, with the new recent releases, are any of the recent releases people you'd like to see in AEW, or are these people you'd like to, you know, see build somewhere else and, build up stuff somewhere else and then before, you know, even thinking about it?
Sounds like a good ask the editor question for a Weight Killer Hotline. I can do a whole 7 minutes on that. I don't know if anybody really jumped out. Eric, how about you? Did you see the cutbacks and think, oh yeah, Ever-Rise, they need to bring them in, or anything like that? Like, anyone jump out?
There is only one former WWE wrestler on my AEW wish list, and it's none of the people they've signed this year. It's Daniel Bryan. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. Daniel Bryan, Kenny Omega. I mean, just the dream matches you could get. I don't know what the chances are of that happening, but save all of your money, Tony Khan. I know money's probably not that much of an object, but save all of it and just sign Daniel Bryan. To answer your question, I just took a look at a news article online of the list of people released. No, not really. Nobody's really jumping out.
I think like two-thirds of them would be like nice hires if AEW needed somebody to take some bumps and be, you know, Matt Sydal-like or less. But I don't think there's any like breakout stars or anyone that, you know, I mean, I think there's some baggage on the AEW roster that if they cut them and replace them with a half a dozen people on this list, they would have more talent at the sort of jobber to the stars level. But I don't think anybody jumped off as a big star. I mean, like Killian Dane is a different body type who can work, but I think they should do due diligence on why WWE gave up on him. But, he comes off as somebody who would be a good different kind of body type and a different style wrestler who you could do a variety of things with. I've liked his work in NXT.
Yeah, because that was the thing I was thinking, that most of the people released that like to see more on Impact, with a handful maybe on Strong, to get a shot at Strong. The only ones that that I think they might be able to do something is with Ever-Rise, just because Ever-Rise was supposed to be the knockoff Young Bucks. So I could totally see the Young Bucks take a match and then just put in their stunt doubles, that kind of thing. That sounds like maybe it's just for a gag for BTE, but, you know, I could totally see them do some of that. So.
Is Buddy Murphy, one of the earlier cuts?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a super worker.
Yeah.
But he's a bit of a Omega clone. Not a ton of personality, but yeah, I mean, he'd be an upgrade over Matt Sydal. He's younger. He's probably a better worker, but I mean, again, what are you really doing there when you're doing that?
Yeah, with Buddy Murphy, I said several times that his work on 205 between him, Cedric Alexander, and Mustafa Ali, they had like a three-way back and forth where they that feud thing going on that was probably some of the best wrestling I've seen like in a long time. So,
if I'm Impact, I think he's a really good fit for them. He's an upgrade in the ring, and he can develop whatever gimmick he wants to have. And, you know, Impact can use people who can just go out there and you tune in and you're rewarded because you're going to get a really good match from somebody who I think fits in well there, just in terms of his stature. And he can be a big fish in a smaller pond, but stand out as if he is absolutely deserving of a top-tier spot there. Javier, I wanted to ask you, what do you think of what's your take on the Conan Tully exchange, and what Conan had to say?
You pretty much hit everything, because I had a lot I was going to say. It was pretty much everything that you guys already talked about. It just felt to me like, again, I haven't listened. I don't even sure if it's around because after his if it came back after his health issues. But the Keeping It 100, it was almost like a pastiche of stuff that he's always talking about on the podcast. And that was – and I'm thinking, like, if I'm telling him, like, well, I don't really need to say anything because he's kind of sort of buried himself at the same time because it was, like, just so random and all over the place, you know. I get what he was trying to go for, but it was like, I'm going to touch a little bit here, I'm going to touch a little bit here, I'm going to touch a little bit here, and if I never have to see we're like a scarecrow in the field, we're outstanding in our field, like a scarecrow outstanding in the field, if I never have to hear that again, I'd be really happy. So, because, I mean, he's I like really that. Likes that line. And I'm like, but because I used to hear his show like all the time and he said it a lot, it's like, oh, come on. I'm tired of it. So, but yeah. I did see that you had the question about the what he meant by the speaking Spanish. And yeah, it's Daga, is married to, Tessa Blanchard.
It felt like there was a lot of knowledge that a lot of people are like, oh, I know what he's talking about. And for them, I don't think it was a great promo. But for people who have no idea what he's talking about, this is not a good promo at all. Like, especially because, like I said, what he said didn't fit as babyface or heel. And there was so much to do with North Carolina, New York. And he kind of swung and missed. Yeah, or hit a few fall balls.
I mean, he was half a click away from going Cornette, getting himself fired, you know. If he went down just a little bit further than any one of those paths, canceled himself.
Uh-huh. Cool. Javier, great talking with you.
All right. And good talking to you again, Eric. Maybe we'll do the New Japan Pride podcast. Hopefully I'll be able to get it done tomorrow because it's been a rough week. Because remember I told you about work? It got the person that was supposed to hire did not get hired. So I am way behind. So behind. All right. All right. Have a good one, guys.
All right, cool. Thanks, Javier. Appreciate it. All right, cool. Well, I didn't think we were going to go as long with this as we did, but wow, we have. So, Eric, we can wrap up there, and I thank you once again. It's been fun. You can go do your research on ways vegans get protein because that's like a 15-year-old cliche that you should know better about by now.
Oh, it's way funnier to poke you with it, right? Because I know I'm going to get the outraged reaction, and
it's more of an eye roll than outrage. It's sort of like it's kind of that tired old uncle joke where you're like, you're really still telling that one?
Okay, fair enough.
Yes. All right. Javier's still on the air laughing at me.
He's laughing at you getting one over on me, saying I'm a tired old uncle. Yep.
Yeah, thinking he's funny telling the Google. It's like saying the Google. You know, it's kind of like that. All right, I'm really muting Javier now, so he can't laugh. Cool. No, yeah, it's been a pleasure. It's always a blast, Eric. Thank you so much. I'll sleep on it and see if we want to do this again.
Okay. Thank you as always, Wade. You remain intriguing and entertaining as always, and then professional with gravitas, depending on what the mood calls for.
Awesome. Thanks. All right. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time you download.